If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. The name of this book struck me for a variety of reasons. My Broken Dog, Living with a Handicapped Pet. And later, we'll find out and we'll learn about rehab for pets. But first, the author of the book, this book, Sandy Kubilis, is here. And Sandy, what a great writer you are. I mean, you also write about, and before we talk about the dogs and the dog stories, I mean, you describe everything in great detail. For example, my shoulders slackened and the coldness of the house crept through the blue flannel pajamas my mom had sewn me. Your mom sews you pajamas, or did at the time?
Yes, she stopped sewing probably about 5 years before she died, and she was getting arthritis. And she sewed me about a dozen pairs, so I'll probably be wearing them the rest of my life.
Well, every time you put on your pajamas, you think of her, I guess, and that's not a bad thing at all. All right. Aside from being a wonderful writer and a great storyteller, you have stories about dogs in the book. And it's not only a dog who was a handicapped, if that's the right term, dog named Kaylee, but it's also two other dogs as well, and they really aren't happy ending stories at all. Can you talk about these dogs first before we get to Kaylee?
Sure. There's always figuring out what is the beginning of your memoir, because I knew I wanted to write about Kaylee. And so I kind of decided to start why Kaylee was so important to me. And part of that is because I had a dog for 5 years before that who was epileptic. So all my dogs seem to have some problem. And she ended up getting killed on a cross-country ski trip where she got hit by a snowmobile. And that was very devastating. We were up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan at the time.
Horrible.
So that was very devastating that that happened and could have been prevented if we had her on a leash and things. But, you know, we thought she was well-trained. And anyway, so that happened.
Well, I want to stop you there if I can, because is there a lesson to be learned that you can advise other individuals when they are doing outdoor activities and they assume, often correctly, that the dog will be okay, but sometimes not so correctly?
Right. Of course, always you're supposed to have them on a leash, but there are times where it's very inconvenient. Cross-country skiing has ski-joring, where you actually have the dog on a leash and they kind of pull you. We have tried that a little bit, but that is more work for the dog. Mostly it's making sure your dog is very well-trained and making sure you're paying attention to the dog. If you see something in the environment before they see it, to be proactive, or watch your dog's head. If their ears are perked up and they see something or hear something that you don't, that you can catch them in time. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's the first dog. Tell me about the second dog. You went out, you went to a pet store, and then what happened?
Yeah, back in the early 1990s, they had pet stores then where you could buy dogs. We bought a Springer Spaniel puppy who unfortunately had distemper and died within a week of getting her. It was very devastating.
Heartbreaking. And, you know, as I was reading the book, two things came to my mind. First of all, it's what we know today about buying through a pet store in the first place. Not that distemper can necessarily not happen if you go through a breeder or if you go to an animal shelter or rescue, because it can, but presumably the dog's been vaccinated and you don't know that the pet store is telling you the truth about the vaccines that the dog has received or not. That's one thing that comes to mind. But the other is, as I read about that, and also the dog that you mentioned that had seizures, And it's true for any of us. Gosh, wouldn't it be nice if we could turn back the clock? And today, there are medications that are just better for dogs with seizures. And distemper isn't automatically curable, but more likely to be than it was back then. I mean, did you think about that as you were writing the book all these years later?
Well, actually, distemper for puppies is still, I mean, dogs that die from distemper are most likely young puppies or very old dogs.
Yep.
And that's still the case. And she supposedly was vaccinated, but I was told that it depends on when they're vaccinated, the type of vaccine, and, you know, they basically in a pet store, they're more likely to get exposed to various diseases than if you're getting it from a breeder where they're, you know, at a home and with limited other dogs.
Well, I don't want to dive into distemper, but today there are better treatments than there were back then, first of all. And secondly, and again, I don't want this to be a conversation about distemper, but with vaccines appropriately timed, for the most part, the dogs are not going to get distemper. That's why they don't. But, all right, you had two dogs that tragically, you know, passed away. Then tell me about Kaylee.
Well, then we got Kaylee, who was another Springer. I tend to like Springers. And she was healthy. She was fine. We got her from the same pet store, and I was kind of hesitant about that. But it worked out great. She was healthy, did dog training. But then at 9 months old, we were on a long car trip from Chicago to Florida and decided to let her run off-leash and get some exercise because she's cooped up in a car for 2 days. And she ran ahead, and we called her back, and then she, for some reason, veered off to the left and ended up falling off a cliff.
Literally, huh?
Landing. Yeah, literally. Well, she jumped over a little stone wall and landed about 75 feet down. I mean, luckily there was a staircase nearby, but, yeah, that was, if there wasn't a staircase, we never would have gotten to her.
And the good news is...
I mean, we look over this long wall and the horizon line.
And the good news is she did survive, right, Sandy?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, she survived, yeah. And because she's only 9 months old, she only broke her leg. So, but that was a big deal.
But it turns...
She broke it in like 5 pieces.
Yeah, it was a major break, or breaks, to be literal about it. But... I think that, and we'll talk about this when we come back from the break, that Kaylee had more lives than a cat, you know, had 9 lives, so to speak. And we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the part that really the meat of the book is about, and that is living with a handicapped pet. The name of the book, My Broken Dog, Living with a Handicapped Pet. The name of the author is Sandy Kubilis, who will be back with us on WGN. The name of the book is My Broken Dog, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN, My Broken Dog Living with a Handicapped Pet. I want to talk about the name of that book, because is this dog really broken? And we'll get to that. Sandy Kubilis is here, the author of the book. Sandy, you're in Waukegan?
Right.
Yeah, so you're a Chicago area person. I want to celebrate any Chicago author that we can. Ann Beale, a friend of the show, who has written several books, I think she writes a book every 20 minutes, about pets, has said, oh, Steve, you've got to have this person on the show. I checked out your book, and, well, here you are. And where we left off is with your dog, Kaylee, who decided to run over a cliff, again, a dog off leash, right? So I want to talk to you in a bit about, how you feel, guilt, you know? I mean, you clearly love these dogs. I mean, you didn't mean for anything to happen, but the dog, Kaylee, broke her leg in several places. Take it from there.
Yeah, we managed to find her probably within 5 minutes of her falling off the cliff, and we were able to get to her, and surprisingly, she was conscious. Very little blood, actually none on her leg. She probably just bit her lip. And we carried her up a bunch of flights of stairs, ran to the car, got her to a veterinarian, was probably within 15 minutes of the fall. I mean, that was all amazing. And she never went into shock. And the vet there was a local, like a country vet, who said, well, I can amputate and that's it. And we didn't really want to amputate. Well, she's a young dog. We were very active. We did a lot of canoeing and hiking and wanted her to have four legs. So I ended up taking her back to Chicago, Chicago area, and had a vet work on her and save the leg, although it was a very, very long recovery. They ended up having to do a bone graft where they put a bone from another deceased dog and put that in her in place of the broken area.
Yeah, it's amazing what
inside a metal plate.
It's amazing what medicine can do. All right, so after ongoing PT and a longer recovery, as you said, wouldn't you know it, something else happens.
Well, basically then she had the plates and the screws in her leg for about about close to 2 years, I guess. And she was well, she was fine, had a great life for, I don't know, half a dozen, 8 years or so. And then she started limping and limping, and the vet said, oh, it's just arthritis. Well, after a couple of months and kept taking her back, the vet finally took some x-rays and found out she had osteosarcoma or bone cancer in the affected leg. And the plate had been taken out and all the screws, but sometimes the irritation of that, I guess, can irritate the bone, and there's some slim chance of getting cancer in an area like that.
Yeah. And
so we ended up having to amputate that leg.
Mm-hmm.
We tried so hard to save it. And at that time, this was about 2000, they said you could do chemotherapy or not, but they recommend chemotherapy, but the dogs only lived about 2 months longer than if they didn't have chemotherapy.
And
so, back then, osteosarcoma was very deadly. Most dogs died within 6 to 8 months. So now it's a lot better, as you had said. We decided not to do chemotherapy. We're like, well, what's the point in putting her through chemotherapy? And it was very, very expensive. I didn't have dog insurance at the time. I had pet insurance back when she fell off the cliff, and that helped pay for some of it. But around that period of time, pet insurance, they realized how expensive it was, and so they stopped. There weren't many places that sold it anymore. Now it's changed quite a bit. There's lots of places that sell pet insurance. But so she got had the leg amputated, and about 6 months later, she started wobbling and falling down a lot, so we got her a wheelchair. And she was pretty good with the wheelchair, but then one night I left her home alone for about 6 hours, and I come home, and she can't walk at all, and she just kept falling over. And it turned out she was paralyzed, pretty much from the waist down. And that's why she was my handicapped dog. And I had to carry her up and downstairs and all over the place, and everyone told me, why don't you put the dog down? She's suffering. And you know, that's always the point. When do you put a dog down? How much are they suffering? And we decided as long as she seemed happy to get petted and didn't seem to be in a lot of pain, we would keep her around. And we kept her around. She lived almost 2 years from the time she started limping.
Which is incredible.
So,
that was unheard of then. It still is, really, for a dog with osteosarcoma. Do you have any advice for people who live with a broken dog? And that's the name of the book, My Broken Dog. But would you really define Kaylee as being broken?
Well, physically, yes. Because first she broke her leg, and then she was handicapped, needing a wheelchair, and even then she could hardly walk much with the wheelchair because she was paralyzed in the back end. So she couldn't walk at all. We had to prop her up with a pillow. She couldn't even lay on her chest for very long. She mostly laid on her side. So, she was pretty broken in terms physically. Mentally, she always seemed to be fine. You find weird ways to play with dogs. I could throw a tennis ball directly at her, and she would catch it and then drop it, and I'd throw it, 5 feet away, I'd throw a ball at her, but that was her way of playing ball. So you find little ways to make some good moments.
And
there is obviously a financial toll and emotional toll, especially when things last for a long time. a lot of stress, but it was worth it in the end, but it was, it gets to be a little wearing, but I think everyone in your household needs to be on board, because it can be taxing if all the responsibility of a handicapped dog lands on one person.
So when all of this happens, because I said I would ask you this question, we have just less than 2 minutes here, but the dog, number one, off leash and ended up dying, the snowmobile dog, going to a pet store that maybe didn't properly vaccinate for distemper, and then the dog off leash again. You clearly love dogs, and you write about it in the book. I mean, it's profoundly clear. My question is there guilt involved, and how do you live with that? And I don't mean that in a bad way. How do you advise people? Because we're all only human.
Right. There is a lot of guilt in terms of what you did to the dog by letting them loose, but they enjoy being loose so much. It's so hard to not let them run loose some. Probably having them run in more safer places. Now they have dog parks, but dog parks can have a lot of hazards too.
Yeah.
I guess my main advice is that if you're not familiar with an area, don't take chances and let them loose. If you go to a local spot and you know all the roads and all the hazards, then you're probably, and your dog listens pretty well, you're probably okay. But, yeah, in new places, you really need to be a lot more cautious.
It's worth the read. It's called My Broken Dog Living with a Handicapped Pet, which a lot can be done with today more than when you experience this. We'll find out what can be done, what physical therapy can do in our next segment. Sandy Kubilis, thank you so much for joining us. By the way, the book, My Broken Dog, available on Amazon. Thank you so much, Sandy.
Thank you too, Steve. Thank you.
On January 4th, we lost one of the greatest animal trainers ever and a friend of this radio show. She had been on this radio show several different times. Her name, Karen Pryor. So Karen is the one who was years and years, decades ago, a dolphin trainer, and she was one of the first who thought, okay, how do I communicate with a dolphin? You can't put a leash and collar around the neck of a dolphin. So she and others created the dolphin whistle. From that, she got the idea of using a clicker, which makes a sound kind of like that, a novel sound, to communicate with dogs. And soon enough, zoos all over the world were using this for captive animals. TV trainers, movie trainers were using this as well because it's a very humane training method called clicker training. Karen Pryor was also a great person. We'll miss her, passing away at the age of 92. More on my website about her, and that's stevedale.tv. Well, after talking about the book, My Broken Dog, Living with a Handicapped Pet, I thought it would be this perfect opportunity to talk to Todd Miner about what he does, and that's rehabilitation for pets. I think, Todd, even more than every Starbucks on the corner or Walgreens on the corner, there is now a physical therapy place on every corner for people. But so why not for pets? And for those who don't know, explain what that means and what you do.
Well, hi, Steve. It's good to be back again. And yeah, I share your dream. I would love to have these places everywhere for all of our loved ones. Basically, I do physical therapy. So I've been a human PT since 1990, and I switched species in the early 2000s and have been treating dogs and cats ever since. And physical therapy is just like you would imagine for a human being. So somebody comes in and they're stiff, they have trouble moving a limb or walking, or they're just having a lot of discomfort, and I relieve that. I use a lot of the same methods that I used on people. So we treat muscle pulls and inflammation and stiff joints with massage therapy and dry needling and cold laser therapy, and we gently stretch the dogs and get them moving and then start doing exercises. So basically we reduce discomfort and then we increase function, and they're able to live longer because they can move better and they can continue walking when otherwise they couldn't.
Are a significant percent of your clients sports injuries, quote unquote? I mean, dogs who are outside, not necessarily in an organized canine sport, although that too, But outside chasing tennis balls and just move the wrong way, like we do, are they similar injuries to that extent?
You know, it's almost identical, Steve. You know, the term weekend warrior, you're going to get that with dogs because a lot of times our pets are laying at home waiting for us all day while we're at work. And as soon as we come inside, we're like, all right, let's go. And we get up quickly and they run to the park and they're all excited about chasing the ball. But, you know, they've been laying there for hours and they're stiff. And a lot of times that's how injuries occur.
Well, that's interesting. Should we have our dogs do warm-up exercises like people are supposed to do, but a lot of us never do?
Absolutely. Especially as dogs get older. A big portion of our population is older dogs. And when I say older, over 8 years of age, you know, the body starts to get a little bit stiffer, just like it does in people. So walking gently, slowly before they get into the zoomies or start, you know, flying down the stairs to get out of the house, even a heating pad can be very beneficial as a way of warming our friends up before we go out and play.
Should they do stretching exercises?
Yes, absolutely, especially the older dogs. Now, a lot of dogs naturally do that. I mean, I'm sure you'll see your pet do a down dog or an up dog when they get up out of bed, and that's because they know inherently that they're aware they need to stretch and loosen up. So it is a natural thing, but when your dog stops doing that, that's when you need to be concerned that something is wrong.
So here's an idea for you. I know a couple of years ago, I can't think of a veterinarian had this idea, and she may have even written a book about how to motivate your dog to stretch in all the right ways before exercising. Maybe you could do handouts about this, but give us one or two tips, because you can't tell a dog, reach up, reach back this way. But you can tell a dog if you have a toy or a treat in your hand, but what should they be doing?
That's a great question. One of the easiest things that we send our clients home with is called a reach and stretch. And you can have a dog stand on the first step of a stair or something that's about 8 inches high. You could put a yoga mat on top of a block or a book, put the front paws on the higher surface, and then bring a treat towards their nose so they have to reach up just like we're reaching for a dish in a high cupboard to stretch and grab the treat. So when they do that, they're going to extend their entire spine from their head to their tail, and they're going to push with their back legs, and they're going to fire up their glutes, their paraspinals, and their quads. So it's a really good extension stretch, and I would recommend trying something like that.
So we talked about the many dogs that see you because of so-called sports injuries, or maybe they have a sports injury and then have surgery for a cruciate tear or some such thing. And then just like, again, same thing as all of us. If we have surgery on our shoulder, or if we have a cruciate tear and have surgery, we go to rehab. It's now insurance covers it. It's par for the course, right? You're going to do this. Same for dogs?
Absolutely. Recovery, physical therapy after surgical intervention is very important because usually they've been off that limb for a period of time. So that muscle has wasted. It's gotten weaker. And dogs, unlike people, are quadrupeds. So a lot of times they'll be like, well, I got three other good legs. I don't really have to use that. So even after they've been, you know, repaired surgically, they may continue to not use that leg because even though the injury's been fixed, the muscle is now weak and they don't depend on it. And without physical therapy, that can become a chronic problem.
So arguably, it's even more important for dogs, is what you're suggesting?
Yes.
Hmm. And are you able then to bring back these dogs into the shape they were previously in?
Oh, absolutely. And many times we can get them in better shape because a lot of times these injuries could be due to compensation or something else happening where had they been stronger and more balanced in the first place, that injury may not have occurred. So a lot of times it's preventative too, and we can avoid the other CCL from being torn in many cases.
Well, right. And I believe statistically, once an ACL is torn on one leg, it is likely to happen to at least one other leg. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's definitely the statistic. And I'm wondering if that might be different if we had a physical therapy intervention and what those numbers would be like.
That would be a great study. You know, what they are currently
absolutely.
And then, right, what they would be with intervention. The other population that you see, I suspect, includes to some extent cats, and that would be older animals.
Yes, that's a huge percentage of our population. I'd say probably over 50% of our patients are over 8 years of age. And, you know, if you do the math, right, it's the 8 times 7. So they're, you know, they're middle to later aged, and things just don't work quite as well. They get a little stiffer. They get a little weaker. And we can reverse that. We have a lot of hills at our facility, so we shift the weight backwards and allow the dogs to start using their back legs again, because that's notoriously where they tend to get weaker as they get older.
Well, I want to talk about some of the things that you're able to do, not only for those older dogs, but also how you work with veterinarians as far as medications and all of that, and what you're able to do today for dogs, like we just talked about, a dog that was suffering paralysis. I mean, what can we do for these dogs? And also, cats. What do you do for cats, and how do you convince them to jump into the water for hydrotherapy? We'll talk about all of that when we come back with Todd Miner, the owner of RFIT, and we'll learn about where RFIT is and what else RFIT does on WGN. Todd Miner is the owner of RFIT, Rehabilitation for Pets. And Todd, I must at the outset here apologize to you, if that's okay.
Why is it? Yes, I'm not sure why, but
well, I'll tell you why, and you'll completely understand. It's because one of your clients happens to be Paul Lisnick, who loves his dogs. Mm. He loves his dogs, mm-hmm. But then you have to deal with Paul. So I apologize. I apologize for that. But what you can do, and I've seen what you do and have done with his miniature schnauzers. I mean, what you do is quite amazing in a sense, but then again, there is no fountain of youth as far as I know. So someone comes in, and this has got to be typical, and they have a dog that's, I don't know, 14, 15 years old. And they say, okay, try anything you can because we want this dog to be as comfortable as the dog can be for as long as the dog can. So they're doing things like acupuncture that they've never even thought about for themselves. Do you see that all the time?
Yes, I do. And when you ask about a fountain of youth, I think the closest thing that there is movement. You've probably heard the term motion is the lotion.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what we believe in. And if the dogs tend to stop moving because it hurts to move, and that's a vicious cycle. So acupuncture is a great tool. We do dry needling, which is a deeper form, using acupuncture needles to get the muscles to relax. We use laser therapy and soft tissue joint mobilization, all of which is to try to get pain to be reduced to allow them to move in a more comfortable way. If we're able to get them to start moving, wonderful things can happen because we can build up on that. We can get them to start standing again, and then they start walking a little bit more, and then they start walking uphill, and then they start pulling some weight, and we can start building muscle again, and we can get them much more active than when they first come in.
So there you are. You are at a swanky cocktail party, and you go to this person's house and you see their cat, and their cat is walking in such a way that you say, oh, I can tell this cat is in pain. And you say something to the person whose swanky cocktail party you're at, say, your cat is hurting. And they say, no, my cat's not crying. My cat is doing fine. But you can tell by the gait, because you're an expert at what you do, that this cat is actually being stoic, which is what cats are all about, and this cat is actually hurting. Or the same thing even at a local park. You know, you're taking your dog for a walk, you see someone else's dog, you know, because you wouldn't tell a stranger, maybe you would, you know, your dog is hurting, and they say, no, absolutely not. Can we always recognize that our pets are hurting?
No, our pets are expert. Like you said, stoic is a great term. They want to hide. And I think it's, you know, just from basically being in the wild, they don't want to show weakness. And it's, you know, part of being in the pack and all of that. But, you know, a predator would see an animal behaving in a lame way and look at them as a target. So I think naturally they try to cover it up. So by the time we do see a dog or a cat limping or hunching and it's obviously in pain, they've been in pain for quite a while. They just can't hide it anymore. So when you do see your pet behaving in certain ways, in an abnormal way or a reluctance to get up, lameness or a hunching in the back, they are having discomfort and it's time to bring them in.
Now, you said motion is the lotion, but there's lots of reasons. I'm talking about dogs at the moment, why an older dog just doesn't want to move, and certainly osteoarthritis is one of them. Pain certainly matters. But sometimes dogs, just like people, as they age, want to do less. And what's more, with cats, they don't do much anyway. So how can you even tell? You know, necessarily, the cat's sleeping more, but the cat was sleeping 12 hours a day. Now the cat is sleeping 13 hours a day. Sometimes it is difficult to discern, I suggest.
Yes. The other things you can look at, too, is just their general attitude and demeanor. Are they being a little more or less social? Do they growl or do they move away from you when you try to touch them? That could be an indication that they're having discomfort. Is their appetite diminished? Are they becoming incontinent? These all are different things that could be a result of discomfort.
Absolutely. Now, I told you, and now I will ask the impossible question, how do you deal with cats? Because sometimes they don't want to be out of their home. Let me rephrase that. Often, they don't want to be out of their comfort zone in the first place. So now they're stuffed into the carrier. They're in the car. They go to see you. And what's more, sometimes you put them in a hydrotherapy pool, which means water.
Well, here at this facility, we don't do hydrotherapy, so the cats are safe with that. But the other thing is that we really do our best to approach every animal gently. I like to say that many of us are cat people that work here. I personally am. I have two of my own. And so we always give them kind of a fair breath. We've had very good results with working with the cats. We tend to be just a little bit more patient, working with them on their terms. But they respond just like dogs do once you start demonstrating some pain relief. They're like, okay, this is a good thing. I'm going to, let this person do what they're doing. It's definitely helpful.
Well, the name of the author we spoke to before, you wrote a book called My Broken Dog. And it's a well-written book. In some ways, I have issue, and I'm not criticizing the book or the author, believe me. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had her on the radio. But My Broken Dog, is that quite right? Some animals, dog or cat or whatever pet you have, may suffer at some point in life, just as in people, an illness or a disability. I suggest they're not necessarily broken, especially with what we can do today, including what you do. What do you think about that?
Well, I think animals are amazingly resilient. I mean, I have a 19-year-old dog that went blind about a year and a half ago, and within just a few months, she completely adapted and was like, what eyes? I don't need them. So I just think that they're just incredible creatures. And when dogs become paralyzed or, they have issues with their limbs and their gaits, we're able to give them these wheels and these other things, and they are able to adapt so quickly. So I would be careful using that term as well. I just think that they tend to modify. I think that they're incredible adapters, and they're able, as long as they're still comfortable and enjoying life, they can go on and have a wonderful life despite having, maybe just two limbs.
Do you ever work with paralyzed dogs?
Yes, we do, because there's a lot of other parts of their body that's affected just because they're paralyzed. So their upper body can get very sore if their hind legs are paralyzed. And we do soft tissue massage and treatments to keep their front legs going and their neck, because everything has to work harder that's remaining. So we do a lot of treatment with dogs like that.
Where is RFIT located?
We are in the heart of Lincoln Park at 2112 North Clybourne Avenue. So if you're familiar with Dirk's Fish in Chicago, we're right down the street.
Yes. Okay. And what's your website?
It's www.arfit.biz, B-I-Z.
Arfit.biz. Todd Miner, you make a major difference for our pets. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Steve.
I am so excited about next week's show. Dr. Sophia Yin's Low Stress Handling and Behavior Modification of Dogs and Cats. That is the name of a classic book that the late Dr. Yin authored. I knew Dr. Sophia Yin fairly well, actually, and this is the second edition of that book. Dr. Yin was out there for years talking about low stress handling. She is the one who really created the idea and showed veterinary professionals and others, dog trainers, for example, how to do this. And now there's a second edition of this book, edited by Dr. Christine Calder and Pat Coven, that we'll talk about next week. It's about, I think, 450 pages or some such thing. Great exercise just to lift this book. We'll have Dr. Calder on next week, Steve Dale's Pet World. Be good to your pets. They'll be good to you. And we will talk to you bright and early next week.